Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Hawk Blogger. And excited to have another Seahawks Saturday with good pal Jeff Simmons. How are you doing up there in Toronto, my friend?
I'm all right, man. It's kind of a weird time over here. It's very gloomy over here. It's like your weather. yeah. Before I became a new parent, I'd usually sit and watch college basketball for 12 hours on the weekend like this, but don't know if I can pull that off anymore. Now, Evan always talks about being old and washed up. This is like the first time I felt that way. So,
yeah, I know that feeling. And I mean, I used to be so into March Madness. I used to be all over that. And I don't know if I'll watch a single game. We'll see. We've got a fun show today because I think you and I, we kind of internalize things over the week, and we use this as a therapy session between the two of us to kind of get it out. And there's some mock drafts that are out there that I think are a little, I don't know. I think I have some visceral reactions when I see names listed there, and then I see their reasons for them putting those names. And I know you're having the same experience, so we'll talk about that. Before we get there, Jeff, a couple things I got to announce for folks. So one, we're at this is episode 361. Episode 365 is going to be Tuesday, and you're going to want to tune in. Tuesday is going to be a special show because it's looking like we're going to have some pretty fun giveaways from JK Boots for folks that are tuning into that. We're going to have some giveaways probably from Pagliacci Pizza as well. Who knows what else will be in store. And in addition to that, I was talking to JK Boots yesterday, and we've launched a new version of our promotion, and it's, I think, really, really cool. So if you guys don't know about JK Boots, best boots you're ever going to own, and they're a Spokane-based company, family-owned, been working with them now for a few months. It had been, the new deal is if you use code HawkBlogger, you get $75 off the boots you buy, which is a significant chunk of change. So $75 and every boot sale, $15 is going to go to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation. So we were doing this thing before where we had like you hit certain milestones and we give away boots, but the Wildland Firefighters Foundation doesn't just need boots. So we're going to have an ongoing thing. Every purchase for now until the next few months, you get $75 off, which is not a small amount, and $15 is going to go to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation. So I'm really excited about this, and to kind of celebrate this and thank Seahawks fans and Real Hawk Talk fans and Hawk Blogger Morning fans, we're going to give away a bunch of stuff this Tuesday, episode 365. So make sure you tune in for it. It's going to be fun. We'll celebrate that together, and we'll see what other kind of things I can get in store by Tuesday. Got a lot trying to figure it out, but we'll see what we do. So it'll be a fun celebration. So Jeff, you know, there's been a lot going on this week. We'll get into the draft specific stuff in a second, but I'm curious what's caught your eye before we kind of get into those details.
Obviously, like with the Seahawks, the offensive line, and this was a week like they had Tevin Jenkins in and they had Lucas Patrick in. And you were one of the first to report that. It was like, okay, something's going to happen this week. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I was following that like everyone else. I was curious how the Lucas Patrick thing, how the Tevin Jenkins thing would go, because I thought he was a bit of a long shot. And mm-hmm. people were like following that day like he was like a day one free agent.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of monitoring that like everyone else. And I found it odd that like on the same day he signed with the Browns, and then reports came out of the other two guys they had in the building. All three of them, the timing of it was like, okay, they're going elsewhere. And then Patrick signs yesterday for like no money. And it's like, huh, what's going on here? So then I was very curious to hear John. And I actually thought the guys who do the Thursday interview, I blanked out on their name for a minute.
Oh, Bob.
Bob Stelton. I thought Bob did one of his best jobs finally asking some like pointed questions about them, their offensive line issues. So everything he said made sense in like a vacuum. It's just the benefit of the doubt is just gone from them. And it's like, if it was his first year doing it, he's like, I don't want to spend on mediocre players. I get it. It's just like, he's so, I'm just so curious. And now it's like, then my mind starts shifting towards, okay, like this draft is pretty good. And so really just that's been eating up. And then the second thing that's been on my mind, and this is the probably the anxious or paranoid side of me, but I've been trying to find those contracts for Cooper Kupp and Sam Darnold. It's crazy, though. Like, Sam Darnold signed the first day of free agency. Like, we know kind of the basis of the contract, but it's pretty abnormal that none of their contracts, the three big ones they've signed, have not leaked. And from the Kupp standpoint, I can't remember a time a player signed for like $15 million a year where there wasn't even like a dash of what their guaranteed money was. So it seems like the Seahawks are doing an excellent job being like protective of information, because even like they announced some signings yesterday via their team website, like not even through like the national reporters. And so I've spent a disturbing amount of time looking at like over the cap, and credit to you and Curtis Allen the other night who caught the Chenna thing. But like, it's been the radio silence. Like, their thing has not moved. And we're now entering the third week of free agency, and it's been eating up too much of my headspace for a total almost nothing burger. But I've just been so curious.
No, I mean, it matters because we're going to find out the impact on the cap. And the Achenna Nwosu deal there was impactful. I mean, $9 million is a meaningful amount of cap space that they saved there. And then the Achenna Nwosu injury was also news. We still don't even know like how they didn't follow up on that. Like, what was the surgery for? We don't even know. And he said it's too early to tell PUP. They didn't follow up on that either. I assume the PUP was starting training camp on POP, not starting the season on PUP. Those are two very different things.
Yeah.
So we're kind of wondering there, but hopefully that's not too serious. And yeah, I mean, the cap space stuff, I think the Seahawks, the fact of the matter is, no matter what those contracts come in at, the Seahawks have plenty of cap space to do whatever they want. Like, yeah, more than enough to do whatever they want. So it's more just kind of curiosity about how team friendly those deals are. And so far, pretty much every deal has been very team friendly. Like, I don't think anybody could criticize the Seahawks' work so far on contracts this offseason.
No, if there's an MVP of the Seahawks offseason right now, it's the new cap guy, Joey Lane,
yeah.
And yeah, so I think the Ernest Jones deal was one of the three best deals handed out of any team in free agency relative to how they did it. I think the structure of some of their other deals have been really, really good as well. But the Kupp one is just so interesting because we have no clue what the money is there.
Yeah.
Like, with Darnold, we have an idea of how the cash flow. It's really just a matter of whether they use void years or how much they backloaded it. And I know a lot of people are just curious because these are the first big deals Joey Lane has done. And so, like, I know Evan and some of the other cap guys are like, are they going to use void years? How much are they going to spread out? What's the cap hit? Their cap space isn't as important to me because there's no one left in free agency. And so I don't know what you're using that cap space on unless they're going to have plenty of cap space. Like you said, it should be somewhere between 30 and 40 million at this point. But the Kupp one, the DeMarcus Lawrence one, I've just been so curious because a lot of their deals in the past in free agency, we haven't liked. It's been a lot of one-year deals.
Yeah.
The cap hits have hit too much. So these numbers are just from a curiosity point, because it matters what they're going to do next year. It matters what they're going to do with possible extensions. It's very curious. So still waiting.
Yeah, I would say that a sneaky signing that we haven't had a chance to talk about a little bit is DeAnthony Bell, the safety from Cleveland. You know, I shared some of the thoughts from a friend of mine who's, I think, a pretty credible Browns fan and analyst, and has just said that this guy's an absolute anvil, just hits like a ton of bricks. You know, maybe not the best run and cover safety, but great special teams player and a great box safety. And I think that's a sneaky second wave signing that the Seahawks made. I think the River Craycraft signing is kind of odd. Like, I don't exactly know what to make of it. A 30-year-old, you know, receiver who's never really done much of anything in the NFL, maybe is a returner. Like, it seems like they were actually looking at Michael Gallup to sign him now. I thought maybe they were just kicking the tires to see him coming out of retirement. But I don't quite get why they are signing more vet receivers.
Yeah, that one doesn't make sense. The Gallup thing didn't really make sense to me. Like, obviously it's great to have depth, but they've already added two veteran receivers. They have Bobo here, who is kind of can be like the fourth or fifth receiver. And like this guy, they ended up signing. He's been through like the Shanahan tree. Like he started in San Francisco. He was with Mike McDaniel in Miami. And I think Ben Solak a couple weeks ago was joking that the Shanahan tree only looks at like four players. That was when Darnold signed this guy. So I don't know. My initial thought is like, okay, that's just a camp body, but maybe I'm missing something because they were looking at Gallup, but there's no real role for them because wide receiver makes so much sense for them in the draft because they need like a bigger X receiver to compete with. MBS is a 1 year guy, probably the last year of, he's only probably going to be here 1 year. So you figure that position is a draft position. And then what do they need a sixth or seventh receiver for? Maybe he's a punt returner. I think you saw, you pointed it out, but
yeah,
they didn't sign that guy from Tennessee. They were looking at was Julius Chestnut. He ended up signing back with Tennessee. So maybe it's just returner was an issue for them last year. So that's really the only thing potentially I can wrap my head around. Cause otherwise yeah. There's no role.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was a little confusing to me, but yeah, I would say the state of pain that Seahawks fans are in right now is that they are arguing amongst themselves about whether Tevin Jenkins, Lucas Patrick, Dylan Reduns, Dalton Risner, like which of these, like they're rising and falling with these guys signing. And I'm not like, I'm a Seahawks fan, so obviously I'm not separating myself, but I just, once they missed out on Will Fries, I think this completely changed into a different, and once they hired Kubiak and went to the system, it was basically either they're going to get Fries or Drew Dahlman, which they clearly were not going to do, or it just didn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Like, I don't know about you, Jeff, with the guys that are left, the names that probably give me the most like intrigue a little bit, one would be Reduns, because specifically second round pick, 26 years old, and played mostly tackle and just started playing guard last year. So there's this chance you get him with the new coaching staff, they coach him up, and maybe he starts to realize the potential he had as a second round pick. Maybe. I like the idea of Shaq Mason. You know, he once was a very good guard, and I think it's a really bad sign that Houston decided to replace him with Laken Tomlinson.
Yeah.
But that, and then from there, I don't know, man. I don't know if there's another name that I'd be kind of intrigued by. How about you?
No, it's cleaned out. Like, Shaq Mason is not the player he was even 2 years ago. Houston was one of the only situations worse than Seattle up front last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had a very peculiar offseason of just replacing guys with worse players or older players. When an offensive guard makes it to the third week of free agency in a time where there's a complete dearth of guards in the league, it's very telling. I think Mason's just near the end of his career. I think the fact that Tevin Jenkins made it to the second week in a time where seven teams are bidding on Will Fries, who had five good games, is very telling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm almost at the point where none of these guys do anything for me.
Yeah.
Because when I'm watching these guys in the draft, and I know we're going to talk about this later, like the upside and their potential are really high. And so these guys that just fill roster spots or make us feel better about the short term, it really doesn't do much for me. And that's where I kind of did the one comment where Schneider's like, I don't want to pay for marginal players. In a vacuum, that's a very logical comment. It's just you've lost the benefit of the doubt. But like Dylan Reduns and Lucas Patrick and Tevin Jenkins, who's signing to like be the Browns' third guard. I don't even know what's going on there. These guys are just not going to move the needle. They're just bodies at this point. And like you look inside what they have, like, I don't think it's that different than Satawa Lomea or like Christian Haynes, or I'm not going to come here and say when John Schneider was raving about Anthony Bradford, I wanted to throw my iPad against a wall, but most of the guys they have in house, they're not that different than what's out there. So like Will Hernandez was the one mm-hmm. I liked initially.
Mm-hmm.
Once we heard the Kubiak guys were coming in, I kind of removed him from my mindset. Cause I'm just like, that's not him. If they were going to play gap and they were going to do what they did last year, like Mekhi Becton would have made a lot of sense. The Chargers, who play that style, ended up signing him. Will Hernandez was the guy I thought made a lot of sense. He can just knock people off the ball. John and your show yesterday, and just knowing what they'd want from offensive linemen, they want really good athletic movers, guys who are firing off the ball. I don't think there's anyone left in free agency that really does that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I am. So let's turn our attention to the draft, because barring some kind of miracle, like they trade for Wyatt Teller, which I just, you know, I put out there, I've talked about that for a little while. I looked through all the guards I could find that are on the last year of their deal. There just aren't that many like that I think qualify as even trade targets. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think most likely Cleveland, who signed Tevin Jenkins, will probably let Joel Bitonio go, or he'll retire or something like that, and they'll keep Wyatt Teller, but who knows? So that puts us looking at the draft. And I want to talk about the players that you're hearing that are kind of giving you pause, and the players that I'm hearing that are giving you pause. So we're going to talk first about the guys that maybe are being mocked to the Seahawks, or maybe could fall to the Seahawks, that we don't want the Seahawks to take. And I'm curious, like, who's top of mind for you in that category?
Number one right now is probably Tet McMillan, the receiver. They want to sign DK. They do still need another big body in there. But to go from paying DK whatever you paid him, and we talked about the limitations of their roster, where they want to be a specific team in the trenches, and you know how McDonald wants to play, you know how Pete Carroll wants to play. And then to just reinvest it to just have a younger version of Metcalf, who's not as fast and smart, different kind of player, very different kind of player. I just see a team that's spinning in circles, and I see no direction. They're just going to be a worse version of last year, which is a lot of people already fear that already. If they don't take those resources and either build on a strength or shift that somewhere else, I'm going to have a lot of trouble with that. And just knowing John and the way they draft, they're going to be really focused on their board. But Tet McMillan, to me, is close to an F grade.
Mm. Yeah, not that he's necessarily an F player.
He's a good player.
Yeah, I feel similarly. He's commonly mocked to the Seahawks right now, and every time I see it, my stomach turns a little bit. I'm like, this is not the team we're trying to build. And I'll give you a couple other names, and I'll throw it back to you. For me, and Rob Staten was on this show, he mocked him to the Seahawks in our show last week. Jahad Campbell, I just saw from Deontay Lee, who's a very smart, very good analyst out there. He put out his ringer, you know, mock draft. He had Jahad Campbell going to the Seahawks at 18. It says, fills a glaring need. And I'm like, he's not the only person that's saying that. I'm like, am I crazy? Did I not see Tyrese Knight play very good football as a rookie last year? Did the Seahawks not just sign Ernest Jones to a free agent deal for the next few years? I could see, like, you and I have talked about linebacker as a need, as a depth player.
Yes.
Like, you know, I'm not comfortable with Drake Thomas and, you know, the other guys, Josh, you know, Ross that they've added, like John Ross, whatever it is, Josh Ross. Anyway, I can always get those two mixed up. Anyway, they should draft a linebacker this year. But 18? And like, even if Jahad Campbell ends up being a Roquan Smith level linebacker, like an excellent linebacker, I project that out for this team and the implications of that, Jeff. If you get a great inside linebacker at 18 and then you get a whatever's left at 50 for offensive line, I can't wrap my head around that one. What are your thoughts there?
Like, I was watching the combine and I remember watching John Campbell and I'm like, this guy looks incredible. But that was at the point where the Seahawks, I'm like, okay, they're going to sign someone in free agency at guard. They're going to sign some interior offensive line. And now that the free agency has played out, the idea of Jahad Campbell at 18 just doesn't work at all to me, because the opportunity cost is huge. And like you said, I think a lot of people, the mistake they make is they think, okay, Mike McDonald needs two really good linebackers to run his defense. And when they didn't have great linebackers, we saw what happened last year. Everyone connects the Roquan Smith trade and all the thing like that. But that doesn't mean you need to invest an insane amount of capital at that one position. Mm-hmm. And Tyrese Knight, the reason they identified him is they saw him as a long-term kind of project starter. And when he played last year, he looked pretty good. Like, there weren't a lot of games where, like, man, Tyrese Knight is killing them. Like, right. I think you want to have that continuity of the two of them playing together, build on it. I think absolutely they need a depth linebacker. Like, if one of them gets hurt, I don't know who goes in, and that's a big concern for me. But I wouldn't even have that in, like, the top six needs of this team.
Yeah,
it's head-scratching. I don't understand that one either.
The piece for me is I absolutely would want someone to compete with Tyrese Knight and push him and maybe end up taking over the starting spot. I'm not like Tyrese Knight is the greatest linebacker ever. You can't do better. Like, I get that, but inside linebacker as like the position that's going to elevate your team, if you get a great player, I just don't see it right now. And Tyrese Knight for me was, I mean, he was a rookie of the month, rookie of the week. Like he played pretty damn well. And so that was his rookie season. I think he showed a lot of promise. And I think Mike McDonald has been working closely with him. I've no doubt Jahad Campbell would maybe become the best linebacker on the team. Like, it's not even an anti-Jahad Campbell take. It's just a positional impact take. Like, I just, if they take a linebacker at 18, an inside linebacker at 18, I think it's an awful move for roster building for this team.
Yeah, it is. Because when you watch of like why they weren't winning at the end of the year and what they needed and what their limitations are and what they have and haven't done in free agency, I know some teams in the Seahawks have really just been like, okay, who's the top graded player on our board? We're going to take him. And it's possible Jahad Campbell ends up as the top graded player.
Yeah.
There has to be a situation where you have to think, okay, what's the opportunity cost of this? What's the pressure of the team? Look, if they had signed Will Fries, I think I could have swallowed that a lot more. But it's just the opportunity cost to me is just glaring, and it would stick out like a sore thumb. And you're really playing with fire if you do that. And the way that free agency has gone for them, it really puts a lot of pressure on this draft to address. And Brian, you asked him at the combine, how do you go from good to great? He said the two lines of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. So far, they've not touched one line of scrimmage. The coaching will help. I will say that. I'm a mm-hmm. believer of that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Might be more impactful for almost. But the other side, they replaced Draymond Jones with DeMarcus Lawrence, who I think is an upgrade, but I don't think it's like a glaring upgrade. So if you ask the GM and he says they need to get better at the two lines of scrimmage, and then their most heavy personnel is that wide receiver and linebacker, it just makes the words go hollow. And it's like they look delusional. And it's like they spent so much time with money at safety. They finally get away from that. They have good value at safety now. They've really invested in the defensive line. To come back and just be like, you know, we're going to put more resources into linebacker. That would be completely perplexing.
Yeah. I see a comment from our resident troll on here about, Jahad Campbell's more than just an inside linebacker. He's an edge player as well. Okay. So are you taking him as an edge player? Or you take him as an inside linebacker? Is he going to take Boye Mafe, Derek Hall, DeMarcus Lawrence, Chenna Nwosu off the field? If he is, awesome. Then he's an edge player. If he's not, then what are we talking about? Like, I the versatility stuff pisses me off, man. Like, I don't need to know that you can play seven positions. And by the way, Gray Zabel is the opposite of this. People say, oh, he's versatile, he can play all those positions. That's not why Gray Zabel is very good. That's not why Gray Zabel can be your starting guard right now. He can be a starting center right now. Great. Pick one. That's what he is. It's not about his versatility. It's about that he's a damn good player and that he can play a position for you really well. I don't buy this. He can do all these things. So that makes him, you know, a good fit. So enough on Jahad Campbell. I've had my say there. I appreciate you letting me vent. Who's another one? give me another one, because I got a few more. But is there anyone else? I can list some names for you, but anyone else that you're seeing that you have that visceral reaction to?
Give me another one, and then let me think about it.
All right. I will tell you that another one that I have that reaction to right now is Tyler Booker. I'm out. I've been out on Tyler Booker most of the time. There was one episode I was with you and you kind of convinced me, and it was a good argument about who he is as a leader. And I think that that's really valuable, but I am just everyone is looking at him as like, yeah, if you're running gap power, you know, in a phone booth, you know, if you need them to run outside, run off the ball, that's not his game, bad athletic scoring, do not do it. Do not do it. I mean, I'm okay. Like if he's a pick in the second round at 50 or 52, then I'd feel differently. Like, okay, then that could be interesting, but don't pick a guy that doesn't fit, man. Like, don't do it.
See, I'm not out on him and I wouldn't cringe, but when I heard John Schneider talk, and I sang this clip the other day, like I think yesterday, I finally, up until like last night, I was like, I'd be perfectly fine if they took him. But I wouldn't cringe. It wouldn't be visceral for me, but I just don't think they're going to pick him anymore. I don't even think it's going to be on the radar. John said the number one thing they're looking for is guys who can get into space and get to the second level, and they're looking for movers. That's the opposite of what Tyler Booker is. The reason I like Tyler Booker is I've just thought of so many plays over the last few years where it's third and one and you need 1 yard. And how many times last year did they almost lose games because they couldn't get the third and one and the fourth and one?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I just want someone who can knock someone off the ball. And that's what Tyler Booker is. Like, yeah, if you want to run behind someone on third and one, and I'm just like, they lost that Rams game because they couldn't get 1 yard twice. Mm-hmm. They almost lost the Niners game. Same thing. They sucked in short yards, hopefully. So I'm just sick of this team, and it feels like it's dated back years where they couldn't get a third and one. I've almost cringed where they got to first and goal. And I'm like, okay, Tyler Booker is at least someone you can run behind. But then I heard Schneider talk, and I'm like, you know what? This just isn't happening. So all of a sudden, Daniel Jeremiah had him going eighth overall in his first mock draft. He wasn't in his first round, and he wasn't in someone else's first round. So, Brian, I got to give you credit on that one. You were kind of ahead of the curve of I'm not seeing what other people are seeing. And now we've gone from this guy is a top 12 player in the draft to now I think he was out of two first round mocks I saw this week. So I think like someone like Houston would probably take him or something like that. Like there's a lot of teams that Minnesota needs a left guard still. There's some fits for him, but for Seattle, I think I've kindly come around to this just doesn't make sense.
All right. I'll give you another one. Yeah. And this is going to be controversial.
Yes.
Colson Loveland. I'll tell you why. I've finally been able to kind of wrap my head around why I have this reaction with Colson Loveland. It's not that he's not good. It's not that he might not be a good addition for this offense.
Yeah.
It is very similar to your conversation about Tet McMillan. Like, he is a guy that's going to help you as a receiver, as a weapon. And he's not going to help you as a blocker. And so when you talk Tyler Warren, it's different because Tyler Warren makes this team tougher. He's going to help you in the run game. He's going to help you in the pass game. He's going to help you in ways that George Kittle helps the 49ers. Like that I can wrap my head around in the first round. Colson Loveland is a skill position addition. And just like the Tet McMillan thing, I think Tet McMillan might be a good, you know, like a really good X player for you over the years. But at 18, this year, this roster, don't add a finesse guy at 18. Don't do it. Don't add a guy that doesn't make your team tougher, stronger, more physical. Don't do it. And I don't think that means it has to be an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. I think Nick Amonwori can make your team tougher, more physical. Now, I'm not saying you should draft him at 18. We can talk about that. But I think Colson Loveland does not make your team tougher. I don't think it makes it stronger. I don't think that's why for me, like, don't go finesse at 18.
It's funny. Like, I had the same reaction to the corner from Texas, Barron. And he's a really good player. So,
exactly.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want to say, like, I don't think Barron's good. I have the same reaction. They've spent so much capital at corner, even though it is a long-term need, especially if you're not going to pay But I think it puts you in the same spot where you have too many resources invested in one spot. Just, I've watched this team for years. You think of that Green Bay game, the first half of that, where they're just running it down your throats and you can't pass protect one of the worst pass rushes in the league. And to go and be like, you know, we need to get better at covering receivers. I get that Schneider and his guys have been better at drafting when you've really hyper-focused on getting good players. If the team was a more fully realized roster, like a Baltimore, someone like Loveland or Barron, McMillan, they're all really good picks. But Seattle's not there. They're trying to become a team like that. And I think to become that team, they really need to get better at the line of scrimmage. We heard the GM say it. And so players that are not going to impact the line of scrimmage right now, I have real trouble with. And I think that's almost every position that's not offensive line, defensive line. Tyler Warren, I think, is unique too. And that's where I would be totally fine with him. Because mm-hmm. I think he's that good of a blocker where he can really – and then I think what he does to the Kubiak offense, and we've seen George Kittle. It's not ideal. In a normal draft, I'd say tight end is nuts. But for me, it's got to be line of scrimmage. Other than that, I think I'm cringing at almost any opportunity that's not a line of scrimmage pick because, like, again, the Texas corners are a really good prospect.
Mm-hmm.
I have real trouble with it.
So another name for me is not a first round comp or not a first round prediction, but I've seen this in second round in a couple of places. This is probably my most cringe pick that I see to the Seahawks, and it's Ariante Ursary, the tackle from Minnesota. I've told you before, like, I got such Jermaine Ifedi vibes from him watching him at the Senior Bowl. He is unbalanced as a pass protector and was beaten multiple times by getting off balance, and his hands and his feet don't work well together. And he's a super athletic dude. Don't get me wrong. But if they draft Ariante Ursary, it will show me that this team has not come at all anywhere in their offensive line evaluation. Like, it is Jermaine Ifedi again. And so I do not want to hear that name drafted when John Schneider talked about, hey, Jermaine Ifedi was still playing a few years ago. Like, don't claim Jermaine Ifedi as a good pick, dude. That was not a good pick. That was a bad pick. It was a failed eval. Don't tell me that was a development problem. Like, he played for other teams and he was still a bad player. So that guy for me is high on the list of,
and would he be would he be drafted to play guard? Like, or is he a tackle?
He's a tackle. He could definitely be.
He seems like a tackle.
He could be potentially moved into guard. He's like he is like Jermaine Ifedi. So
yeah, when Schneider's raving about Jermaine Ifedi, the dude's been hanging around the fringes of the NFL. He's been like a veteran minimum player for like 6 years now. Like, that is not what I'm taking credit for. That was, you drafted a veteran minimum player in the first round. Like, that's not a win, buddy.
Can we take 1 second on this other thing that John keeps throwing out there? We've got Steve Hutchinson, a Hall of Famer, out there evaluating. Then he threw out Jason Peters as well. How many players have we talked about, Jeff, that are good at evaluating their own position? Like, that does not make you a scout. It does not make you a qualified. Like, I want to know, of the picks that Steve Hutchinson has helped evaluate for the team, which of those have turned out to be great gets?
The best drafter or offensive lineman is a Jewish lawyer.
Howie Roseman.
Yeah. So I don't.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish, so I can say that. But I don't think you need to be an offensive lineman to evaluate offensive linemen. Yeah. And we saw John Elway evaluate quarterbacks in Denver. Yes, it's good to have those guys in the building, obviously. But Hutchinson's been on board for, 5 years? And it seems like the guy, more than anyone, who dictates the picks is the offensive line coach. So Jason Peters has been around these guys. He was around the worst offensive line in the league last year. Like, I don't think we don't know if Jason Peters can evaluate, but obviously it's a nice thing to have as a resource. But I don't think the results show that, like, having Hutchinson in the building has changed their success rate. It's probably even gotten worse. They haven't drafted a single guard. Guard is their worst position. So, yeah, that one doesn't do much for me. They've had Phil Haynes and Christian Haynes, and not a lot of wins there. So they let Damian Lewis walk. Yeah, that one might do something for like a casual fan, but the results are not there.
As I went through that, any other names that came? Like, I have one more I'll throw out there, but I want to see if there's any other names that came to mind for you.
I'm still not in on Jackson Dart.
That was the other one. I'm not quarterback. In on him. Yeah.
I think that's a real reach. That just seems like a Drew Lock kind of thing. Their prospect profiles remind me a lot of each other. Look, at some point they got to draft a quarterback, and I can't just be like, every quarterback sucks. Well, every quarterback we were looking at the last 2 years for them essentially sucked. So it's not just us. But again, to get Dart, you're going to have to take him at 18, I think. I don't think he's falling to 50. Or the idea of trading up for him the second round, that just makes it seem like he's your guy and he's your franchise guy. I think he's a dart throw. It's not the play on words, but I'm still not there. Him at 18 would be a really tough one for me.
Yeah. My interpretation of if they tick Dart at 18 would not be they love Dart. It would be they've been boxed out of the quarterbacks they've wanted over the years. They are scared that somebody's going to take him, and so that they push him up their board to make sure that they get him.
Yeah.
And that's not a good reason to take a quarterback in the first round, man. That is a terrible reason to take a quarterback. If you're taking a quarterback at 18, your eval has to be clean. It has to be like, this is our guy. It doesn't have to be top of the first round. This guy is the best ever. But you have to be like, oh, yeah, he's going to be our franchise quarterback. We've seen everything we need to see. It is, you know, Aaron Rodgers taken in that range. Like, you got those, like Jordan Love, like you're committing to this guy being your starter. And Jackson Dart, I love Jackson Dart. I actually do. I think he'd be a really fun pick for the Seahawks, but not at 18.
Yeah, so, there's not a lot of quarterbacks drafted in that mid-late teens range that have worked out. Like Kenny Pickett went there. I can't think of like too many guys even in the league right now that were drafted in that part of the draft. It's usually like the Green Bay thing. Rodgers could have gone first and slept. Jordan Love was a real project. That might be the best comp for him, kind of Jordan Love. Took him 4 years to get on the field, and there's still questions. So, yeah, I'd be totally fine with it in the second round.
Sure, sure. I don't love the idea of them trading up to the top of the second round to get him either, because I want them to keep their picks, but it seems like that's a real possibility. I can see them doing that.
I think as this draft goes along, he's going to go a lot higher than people think.
Yeah.
I think there's some real desperate things going on in the round. And I don't know if you've heard the Shedeur Sanders buzz this week, but there's pretty good talk of him going 2 overall.
Yeah, he has been on a wild ride. Actually, I'm going to bring up a fun view here. Let's see if this will be a good view of it, but you can see, yeah, hold on. Here we go. So check this out, Jeff. This is Shedeur Sanders, like draft consensus, like where he's been. It was like 1 overall back in December, dropped down to 2, back to 1, to 2, dropped down to 4. I mean, there are plenty of times where I've seen him, you know, I heard even at the combine, there are people like he might not go in the first round.
Yeah.
And I would be surprised, but yeah, it seems like he has rocketed back up.
Well, the desperation of the Browns and the Giants plays really well into his favor. The Giants got spurned by Aaron Rodgers. They signed Jameis Winston. They need an answer to keep their jobs. The Browns, they've been talking to Russ. Kirk Cousins might be an option, but like, did you hear that clip from Myles Garrett where he's like, well, the team told me the quarterback option, and I'm pretty excited by it. I think that's Shedeur Sanders. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And you can see some of where they've got him going in the mocks. Cleveland.com, by the way, has him going 2 overall to the Browns. When you look at Jackson Dart, who we're just talking about, you know, this guy started in the hundreds, dude.
Wow. Wow.
Like, holy he shit. Was at 124, and this is back in December, and he's had this steady climb. Like, he had this big jump after the Senior Bowl. And I talked about this Dane Brugler. I've talked about it with Ryan Fowler. He didn't do anything at the Senior Bowl to merit that, other than interviews. That's the place where I think his rise has come, because he hasn't done anything to merit crazy. This. But now he's gone from like 124 to, you know, 34. And look, NFL.com, Chad Reuter had him going seventh recently. A bunch of guys have him going in the 20s. Pittsburgh is now a very popular landing spot for Jackson Dart, three spots after the Seahawks, which is what I'm saying about, are the Seahawks going to end up feeling pressure to take Jackson Dart at 18?
21 might be his floor, because they're in this Aaron Rodgers dance, and probably has a 1 year, max 2 years. They need to they've had a rough offseason, just in terms of like selling hope to their fans. Like, they're chasing this 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers around. So that might be his floor.
Yeah. I want to show you one. We'll look at a couple of these. This is a fun one. Like, when we were first starting to look at draft guy, like Armon Membu,
66,
he was down in like the third or fourth round, like on a lot of the mocks that I was seeing. Like, he has gone from 66th to 8th.
Without playing a game.
Without playing a game, buddy. Like, I mean, but damn, he showed up at the combine. Like, he's done everything he needed to do to make this climb. And people just started watching a little bit more, you know, like this is a warranted climb, I believe.
Yeah, he's going to go to the top 10.
So, by the way, you can look at Tyler Booker here, who we were just talking about. He kind of, like, at least by this, has not had quite the drop off that I thought he would.
He's kind of back to where he started.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I would have had him in as like a second rounder, like a high mid second rounder. And he's still like showing up in, you know, a lot
I guess for a gap team, like a late first round pick, would makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But like, Daniel Jeremiah had him at 12 or 13 in his first two mocks. He doesn't even have him in the first round anymore.
I know. Like, the Chiefs over there, like, that would actually make a lot of sense.
So, all right, let's talk the opposite side of this, Jeff. Who are some guys that you're hoping fall to the Seahawks, and that you'd be pretty excited if you hear them call their name? And let's start with it, assuming that it's at 18. Like, we can talk. We both of us are in fan of the trade back and take one of these guys. But let's talk about names that, if they come to the Seahawks at 18, you'd be excited to hear them call.
Well, obviously Membu, but that seems – I'm warming up to the idea of Gray Zabel. It felt like even a month ago, like, that seems early. Like, that seems really early. But just hearing Schneider talk and hearing the way he talks about what they want from offensive linemen, and the guys who move really well, and the guys who fit in the zone scheme. I just want a guy who can fit in at left guard, play the position. And I think he's got pretty good upside. Like, his measurables are very similar to Joe Tooney. And I'm warming up to taking him. And then Daniel Jeremiah had him at 16 overall this week. So it's not like we're reaching here. Like, I think the teams really, really like him. I think I'd be really, really comfortable with him at 18 by the time we get to the draft, and just – given how big this issue is, ideally you trade back and you get him in like 23. But I think based on what they want from their offensive linemen, I don't know if there's a cleaner fit in the draft other than maybe Tate Ratledge than him.
Yeah, and I'm showing here, I mean, Zabel was, before the Senior Bowl, 82. I mean, solidly into like third to fourth round grade. And I was there. I watched the guy in every single one-on-one rep, and he won every single rep at center, at guard. If they played him at tackle, he'd win there too. Guys were calling him, like, defensive players. The reason he got so many reps is because defensive players wanted to go against him. He beat every single one of them. Now, during the team reps, during the game reps, he did lose some things. He wasn't as great there. And so I'm not saying he's a perfect prospect by any stretch.
No, he's not.
But level of competition was answered at the Senior Bowl. He can handle the best of the best, at least in college football. He also, I think, answered the athletic questions you might have about him at the combine. You know, 6'6" guy, over 300 pounds, who did well, 36.5-inch vert. You know, he had a – he ran well. Like, he did well. So I think he's a pretty clean eval, but his floor is still there just because there's a reason you end up at North Dakota State. And
yeah.
You just,
but there's been a lot of offensive linemen like that have gone to those smaller schools and played left tackle and shifted inside. They've done pretty well. Like there's the guy Ali Marpet from Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that guy was one of the best guards in the league. But yeah, I think you see where his proper range in this kind of range somewhere ideally would be 20 to 27.
Yep.
18 is pushed up the board because of the need. I will acknowledge that, but I've come around that I would be – I can't just say, like, this team has not done anything on offensive line when they draft an offensive lineman. And I'm like, well, it's too early. Like, I can't do that. I think I got to take the win there if he gets it. But what about you? Who's jumping off to you?
Man, it's tough, dude. In my, like, dream of dreams, and I think this is probably the least realistic – you know, my Memo is like not even a conversation for me anymore. Like not going to happen.
San Francisco. It's just,
I do have this slight feeling that Will Campbell may drop farther than people. Like he may be like that. His arm length is an issue. Like, I don't care what anyone says. If you look historically, the amount of guys with his arm length that have succeeded at tackle in the NFL draft, like it is a small, small, small list. And so I think that for some people, like I know for some NFL teams, he's off the board as a tackle. And that makes him a guard. And he didn't play guard. And so now you're projecting him at guard. And you like you love the guy. But like, is there a chance he falls? I think it's greater than like maybe like a 5% chance, like not a fractional percentage chance. I think there's like a 5% chance that Will Campbell falls. I would love him. But I think the guy that I just feel most comfortable with, and I've just felt this way for a long time, is not a guy that most people have above Gray Zabel or above, you know, going in the first round in general. It's this guy. It's Donovan Jackson.
Yeah, like if they took him at 18, like I wouldn't bat an eye.
And you look here, like he's been in this pretty much the second round range. Even now, he's at 38th. Like, and you see him like some of these mocks have him going in the mid to late 20s. Obviously, one has him going 16. I just feel like you put Donovan Jackson at guard. He's a starter, and he's got the size, the athletic ability. I just think I feel really good about Donovan Jackson for the Seahawks.
Yeah, he's been kind of me and you's most consensus, probably liked player throughout almost the whole process.
Yeah.
Like you saw he had the athleticism to play left tackle. Ideally, he could be a really good guard. I don't really know why his range hasn't shifted relative to some of the other movement of the guards. He hasn't done anything different. He just seems very stable, high floor. I think his ceiling's higher than he gets credit for. Again, in an ideal sense, you trade down to 24, you get another pick, and you get Donovan Jackson. That might be the best draft scenario of any right now. But I think me and you have been pretty much in agreement since we started following this near the end of the college football season that this dude just fits.
Is there a guy that is not an offensive lineman that you would feel good about?
Like they're safe. Like I like some of the safeties, but I just ranted about not drafting a corner because it's not affecting the line of scrimmage. So it's kind of hard for me to be like, you know, I really like Starks from Georgia, who could be really good, but it goes against everything I said before. The one I'm still conflicted about is Kenneth Grant.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a reach at 18, though, because I don't think he impacts the passing game enough. But like again, if you could be like a mod, we love Tavondre Sweat for the same kind of reason. I think 18 is a touch early, though. I'm trying to think of what other positions would do it for me.
I'm starting to get a little bit of a negative visceral response when it's Kenneth Grant. I have a feel like he did not test as spectacularly as people implied he might. And
yeah,
I like he doesn't have the production to do it.
No.
So it's different. Like I'll throw out a name for me that's kind of on this list still as a guy that I'd be down with if they called out Shamar Stewart. I think this guy did test like an elite athlete, right? And didn't have production, but he tested like a top 10 player. And there are definitely, you know, there are definitely mocks that have him going in the top 10. Like it's not uncommon. If you called out his name, I wouldn't question it. I'd be like, okay, I get it. That guy has potential elite upside.
Yeah, like if they feel good enough and Mike McDonald feels good enough to draft this guy, I think that's a really exciting thing. The tools are obviously there. It's a huge dice roll. But I think if they greenlit him in terms of like character, in terms of just the coaches believing in him, I think almost as much as any other pick, you can really get behind that story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one makes a lot of sense. Like I know Nathan's very high on Kelvin Banks on all the offensive line. Like, I think that would be a really easy story to get behind.
Yep,
I think that one would be really like the tools that he has and what he could do at the guard position, I think would be really high. Again, this is what's such a tricky spot for the Seahawks and why so much keeps pointing back to interior offensive line for me. I can't think of a lot of names that would really get me fired up at other positions. Like, obviously, there's the South Carolina safety that's being tied to them a lot more. Like, I really love Matthew Golden as a prospect from Texas at receiver. I don't think that's where they should use this pick. I'd be pretty annoyed, actually, if they drafted him relative to drafting Jalen Noel in the second round. So, other than, like, Tyler Warren, that's really mostly a lot of the O-line guys for me. Outside of that, I like some of the safeties, but I have trouble with almost every other pick in this range.
Yeah. Yeah. So Emmanuel is a guy that I would have a hard time being upset with them for picking. Like if they pick him, he's to me, Emmanuel and Shamar Stewart are in similar classes of not a clear need, wrong side of the ball. But you know, they have top 10, top 5 potential upside in this whole class. And if you're adding a true blue chip player that you like, and Mike McDonald, who I trust in his eval of those positions and that piece, then okay, I'm on. I'd be like grimace face because I'd like now we got to see how they're going to get the offensive line. And I don't love that. But I would have a hard time being critical of them taking this guy.
Well, there's two parts of us. The drop to 50 is painful, and we probably wouldn't sleep very well. We'd be sweating that out. But the one thing we've been talking about the Seahawks for a while now is they don't have a lot of great players. They have a lot of good players. So if they're hitting on one of these guys with super high ceilings, or they're trying to draft one, I think that maybe more than just like shoring up the interior offensive line might be to what this team needs to go to get out of the kind of the range they're in. Like they still don't have a lot of all pro level players. Like it's a lot of good. Devin Witherspoon is a very good corner. He's been a pro bowler his first 2 years. JSN's a good receiver. But who are the great players on their team? That Leonard Williams played like one last year, in my opinion. I think he should have been all pro. Byron Murphy didn't. He had to look at the stat sheets, the really deep stat sheets to see what he was doing. So it's hard for me to come out and say, like, if they take Emmanuel and he's good, like, they're wasting the pick. Because they need guys like that to kind of get up their funk. But, man, it's just – this is a really easy story to get behind. But, again, the positional value, depth at safety, other spots, you can get a safety later in the draft. Ooh, I'm conflicted on it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of other names I'm kind of looking through here, Jeff. You know, this is the consensus big board. Mykal Williams, I feel like, has been dropping for me as like he's just not athletic enough. I would feel uncomfortable with him being the pick. Mike Green, I mean, certainly has got some upside, but I just think he's not big enough. And I'm a little concerned about, again, physical aspects of this. Is he going to be there? I see Josh Simmons as a tackle. I think that's not the right thing to put him at guards. I'm not a big fan of that. I like Derek Harmon a lot. I'm just not sure I think he's pretty much purely a three tech, and I just don't know that you need it. So like, I can kind of go through like Luther Burden. I really like as a complimentary receiver for the Seahawks. It still would be hard for me to get behind that in the first round.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can look at these names and there's not a lot of guys that, and this is kind of what the draft is, from pick 12, basically to 60, are similar level players.
Yeah.
And so 18 is this weird spot where it's like, usually you're just looking for best player available. But to me, it was sort of like when they took JSN, the more we studied that draft, we're like, this is a chance for them to pivot and take the best at a position. That's where I just think they are with interior O-line. I think you look at those lists of names, they're getting the fifth best defensive lineman, the sixth best edge rusher, maybe the best safety is the pivot. But I think that just 18 spot lines up where you can just get the top interior offensive line. The value is better than just getting, we got to chase a higher ranked player. And that's what's tricky about this draft in general. There's not a lot of, like, I'm at pick 7 or something. Like, there's just not a lot there that's like exciting. Being at 18 is almost as good as 7. So it's a strange draft.
All right, let's do a mock and then we'll head out. And for people that thought when I was telling before that I was annoyed that you couldn't look back, I know that there is this toggle. So I know this exists, but it doesn't tell me who they went to. I want to be able to look back at the, like, I should be able to look back like every other sim. So yes, I built technology products for a living. Yes, I know how they work, but that's not what I wanted this feature to do. I want to just be able to look back at who drafted who. Anyway, so here we are at 18, Jeff. I think like my automatic is to see if you can trade back.
Yeah.
Like some of the guys we like are here. Are like, is there anyone like Kelvin Banks for Nathan would be like stick and pick. Is he that for you?
I need to dig a little more into him right now. I just think there's too many players I'd be comfortable with on the board. I'd be willing to stick, but I know Nathan last week was like, you traded Kelvin Banks away for a third. Like, what are you guys thinking? And it's not a reason. Like, if you can get your best guard and just settle that position down. But it's just, I'm looking at this depth of names. Like, there's like 5 or 6 names that I'd be comfortable with.
So let's look at the offers that we're getting. No, we don't want that.
Why are they always offering stuff like that?
I think that increasingly, I don't think there's a chance Seahawks could get more than like a third would be the top to trade back. And we might even want to make it even more. Let's do a conservative trade back. Let's go into like what's I like the Chargers.
Yeah, like they move up for a receiver.
Let's just get 125 for doing it. So this is something we don't like. But this could be realistic of what you get.
Yeah, like ideally 86, but that seems like too much for a 4-spot.
I think it's possible, but I think for today, let's play with this notion of you don't get as much as you want, but you still trade back 4 picks. It's not a lot, right? 4 picks.
Nathan Ernst is going to crush us if Banks goes.
Right. So we do this. Now we're up at 22. Jalen Walker's still there. Kelvin Banks is still there. Booker, Emenwori, Gray Zabel, Donovan Jackson. Where do you go?
I'd probably take Banks here.
All right, done. We draft Kelvin Banks. Get an A+. Plus we got a 4th round pick for it. How about that?
Yeah, we just beat the system.
I don't think this is crazy. I think Kelvin Banks...
No, he could be there in the 20s.
I think it's possible. All right, so here we are at 50. We have, you know, the next two of the next 3 picks. Donovan Jackson's there.
Yeah. It'd be tough.
Siobhan Revelle, who's recovering from a surgery, like, but a pretty high ceiling cornerback.
Yeah.
Tyleek Williams, who a lot of people like at defensive tackle. I'm not a huge fan. Xavier Watts is one of the highest safety. Mason Taylor. Alfred Collins. I like Alfred Collins better than Malik Williams personally.
Yeah, he's a really good run defender.
There's Jaden Higgins.
Jaden Higgins would be
Jack Besh
jumping off the page to me. Or, you know what? Jalen Noel would be tempting, but he's available in 70.
Yeah. So are you looking quarterback? Like, who are the quarterbacks left? Yeah. So
Tyler Shuck.
Yep. So what are you doing here?
For me, yeah. I'd probably take Jaden Higgins.
Okay. Done. This is going to be a Jeff draft. All right. We're back up at 52. Now, where do you go?
Okay. Keep going down. Mason Taylor would be pretty tempting, but
mm-hmm.
Is Donovan Jackson still on the board?
He is.
I'm taking Donovan Jackson.
Done.
There's your left guard and there's your right guard.
Yeah. I think that you have to, you cannot sit there and say that there's any player on this roster that you're not willing, like at guard, that you're not willing to try to push off the roster. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that's a bad move at all. Ooh, Jack Besh there is
so
very,
Besh and Noel going here.
You already got Higgins. Pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes the Higgins pick not great. I'm so probably looking at your guy, Norman Lott here.
You got Norman Lott. You got Braden Swinson. You got Demetrius Knight.
Makuba at safety too would be tempting.
You could go Tyler Shuck if you want a quarterback. You also get another pick in 10 picks.
Yeah, I'd probably look at my next pick to get.
All right.
I think I'm going Norman Lott.
All right. I mean, I'm loving your draft so far, dude.
I want the line of scrimmage.
All right, here we're at 92. Do you double up on receiver? Like, do you take both Iowa State receivers?
I don't think Noel will be at 92. So I would. If he was there at 92, I would definitely do it.
I think Demetrius Knight is like a sneaky good player. That's the kind of guy I'd want to add at inside linebacker that could absolutely beat out Tyrese Knight. He could also just be, you know, a depth guy that you develop.
I think I'm going to go with the Nathan Ernst draft here. Ooh, Tyler Shuck's still there.
Yep.
You know what? We got to take him.
What were you going to say?
I was going to give Makuba a chance.
Oh. I mean, I don't hate that, man. What do you see? Yeah, you're looking at Andrew Makuba from Texas.
Andrew Makuba. I don't think Tyler Shuck will be here at 92. So let's go with Makuba.
I think that's right.
I think that's where they should take a third safety. I think the value's here.
All right. So now we're at
now we have 2 fourth round picks though.
So this is where we got the fourth round pick. So this is the pick we got for trading back. Yeah, Tyler Shuck's still there. Gunnar Helm, tight end. Chris Paul Jr., also I think a promising linebacker. Jordan Phillips, I really love interior defense tackle.
Yeah, Jordan Phillips.
Will Howard, your guy. Ty Felton. Zah Frazier, cornerback. Jamari Caldwell, defensive.
I would go with Zah Frazier, Campbell, or Caldwell here.
Which one would you pick?
I've taken Norman Lott. I'm going to take Caldwell.
I think that's right. They're different players.
They're different. I think they pair up well. And I think we've really addressed the lines of scrimmage.
All right. So here we are at 137. You still have Will Howard available, Torrey Horton. Zah Frazier still there.
Zah Frazier would be pretty tempting here. I think they need a long-term corner. I would take Zah Frazier.
I think you're absolutely crushing this draft, dude. And I don't think so far there's anything I would say is completely unrealistic.
I don't know if they would double up on guards, but I think they should definitely consider it.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of what they would do, maybe in terms of whether they'd be available, I don't know if anyone so far is crazy.
I might take a Dylan Gabriel here.
Ooh,
like that. We haven't taken a quarterback. I don't know if he's a guy, but I would need to go down the board a little more.
JJ Pegues.
Jalen Trapp. Rob was really telling me about Chase Lunt the other day, but they got to take another UConn offensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, you got Jack Kaiser at linebacker.
Jack Kaiser, actually. I think this is – I would go Jack Kaiser.
I think that's a solid pick there.
I think that's who you want as your third linebacker.
And you're back up again anyway.
I've taken two guards, so I'm not going to take Clay Webb. Who's their tight end? I haven't taken a tight end yet.
Yeah, good question. I don't know if there's anyone that's worth taking at this point. I mean, Roddy Gadsden could
Mitchell Evans is just like a okay at everything kind of tight end, but not that.
Yep. And
Ricky White would be interesting to me here, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I think.
Yep. What about center? Maybe?
Jake Majors actually would be. I wonder if Jake Majors can be a zone blocker, but I'd probably take a shot on Jake Majors here.
Okay.
That's a lot of young rookies to bring in the building, though, actually. You know what? I don't want to add three rookie offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm. You don't have any swing tackles, and I think you do need one. Jaylen, and so
Chase Lunt. I'm going to give Rob Staten the tip on this one. He was showing me some zone blocking clips of this guy. He's a zone blocking heavy tackle. I think that would be it by pick there.
Okay.
Now we're going
all the way to the seventh. We don't have a sixth.
Jake Majors. Wow.
Yep. Jake Majors still there. Rhonda Gadsden's there. Riley Leonard's there.
Riley Leonard, I would take. Okay. We need to take a quarterback at some point.
Okay, we're taking Riley Leonard.
And then I'd probably take Rondae Gadsden. We don't have a tight end yet, but he's gone.
Who else do you have? You have Luke Lachey at tight end.
Jack Nelson. Well, I should have waited for him instead of Chase Lunt.
Yeah.
Is there a running back here?
Let's take a look.
Ooh, the guy USC, Marks. I think this goes – yeah. That would be a tempting pick. Oh, LaQuint Allen. I would take LaQuint Allen.
Okay.
I think he's kind of like a gap back. Yeah. I think that's where you take a running back. Kenneth Walker's in the last year of his deal. You need some depth there.
All right. So let's take a look at this. So first of all, how do you feel about trading back and getting a fourth round pick, which turned into Jamari Caldwell?
It feels light, but I still was going through the exact same names I was going through at 18, so it was like a free pick. So I'm not going to give it an A for the trade, but I'm fine with it. Like, I don't think a drop from 18 to 22 is worth that much more. Like, I don't know what it'd be worth in the trade chart. So it doesn't seem that absurd, and at least it closes that gap from 92 to 137, which feels like a long gap.
Yeah.
I don't think a fourth round pick is the end of the world if you end up still with one of those high ceiling guards.
Yeah, I see someone saying that you didn't take a nose tackle. Jamari Caldwell is a nose tackle.
Jamari Caldwell is a nose tackle.
40 pounds. He's a nose tackle. But some people wondering about tight end. So that's
the miss of this draft.
Yeah.
Like, in hindsight, I might have taken Mason Taylor at 50 and then taken one of the receivers at 80.
I think that might be – that's kind of my general draft rule right now, Jeff, is – don't pass up one of these good tight ends to take one of these okay receivers.
Yeah,
I think that's where I'm at with like. But you're right. If you wait to the third round, like the Jack Beshes and the Jaden Higgins are almost certainly not going to be there.
Yeah, like I think you said in your show, and I was listening to Todd McShay's podcast before our show today, where he was on with Bill Simmons, and he was trying to convince him that the Patriots should take Jaden Higgins with their second round pick, which is like the third pick of the second round. So every one of these mock simulators, Higgins is always there, but you listen to any podcast or any team show, they're having the same conversations about Jalen Noel, Jack Besh. And last year, New England was so desperate to get a receiver, they drafted Jalen Polk way higher than he was supposed to go. And he busted for them as a rookie. Mm-hmm. And they, in New England, they look at him as like the devil right now, sort of like how we looked at D. Eskridge. But there's a lot of fan bases talking about Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel and Jack Besh.
Yep.
And so we're all assuming, because we play at these simulators, that they're all going to be there at 50. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
So if Mason Taylor's there, I think in any scenario, I think they got to take him. But I think some of these guys where you have Jalen Noel going in the third round, I don't think that's realistic.
The convention that I want the Seahawks to break for their own habits is to go like heavy on the heavies. Like, yeah. Like you went Kelvin Banks, Donovan Jackson, Omar Norman Lott in three of your first four picks. And then you get Jamari Caldwell, you know, a couple picks later. You've added so much beef to this line, to like this roster. And they just don't do that generally. No, they just never. Don't do that. And so I want them. I think they value speed over strength, speed over like heft. And if you have just a speed team and you don't have like the strong team, like ultimately, I think strength wins in the end. So
look at the Eagles. Just,
yeah, that's why. I mean, that's probably why I think I reacted positively to this draft. Banks and Jackson, I really like. I think Higgins is the best receiver you could come out of this draft with. That's where I've kind of landed. Him or Jack Besh, but I think Higgins, because he's got speed, I put him a little bit above. Besh is a better blocker, which I think is really good. But then you add Omar Norman Lott, who's kind of a combination of strength and speed. Caldwell, who's similarly heft and strength and speed. I think Makuba is a really physical, like even Higgins as a receiver, 6'4", he's a physical presence. So like,
yeah, you got bigger.
I can look at each Zoff Frazier, 6'2" corner. Like every one of these guys in your first five rounds or first four rounds, I can make the case that each one of them makes the position group that they enter more physical than it was before.
That's how I look at this team. What's been killing me for years. It's true. They seem to value speed, speed, speed. And that's the speed matters. It definitely matters. But you look at how much they've been pushed around and what Mike McDonald's teams have done so well at other spots. You got to get bigger and stronger. I hope that's a mentality that I know John Boyle did that story where Mike McDonald went position by position and talked about what he wanted. I don't imagine their ideal offseason was to get Cooper Kupp and Sam Darnold and not address much of the line of scrimmage. So it now puts a ton of pressure on this draft.
Yeah,
it does. I hope they buck their 10 season. They're just like, we're going to take a safety and then a receiver because they're the best guys on our board. And then we're end up in the same spot next year.
That would be rough.
I think they need to really look at themselves in the mirror. I think they really need. I'm hoping McDonald has an honest conversation with them. But so many of those Niners guys who are now on the staff, you've talked about that quote. They say, get me the skill players. We'll figure out the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think you're playing with fire. Look at the Niners. They haven't been able to win because of that. I think because of that mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, great having you today. I'm going to get some super chats in here. I'll let you go back to your family. So that was Jeff Simmons at Real Jeff Simmons. Make sure you check him out on Twitter and make sure you give the show a like, click subscribe. I will tell you where we're going in terms of the channel here in a little bit. Episode 365 is coming up Tuesday. There will be giveaways. JK Boots is going to have giveaways. We're going to have some Pagliacci giveaways, Pagliacci Pizza giveaways. We're going to have a lot of fun on episode 365 on Tuesday. So make sure you're ready for that. That'll be Tuesday morning. Also, mentioned JK Boots. JK Boots, we just redid this offer yesterday. So code HawkBlogger now. $75 off the best boots you're ever going to own over at jkboots.com. Plus, every time you use code HawkBlogger, $15 is going to get donated to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation that keeps our Northwest forests safe and Northwest Forest Firefighters safe and protected. So use code HawkBlogger, get $75 off and give $15 to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation. So great thing going on there. And let me get to some of the super chats. Rick R has gifted 5 HawkBlogger memberships. Thank you so much, Rick. Appreciate you, dude. Has been doing this for a long time and means a lot to a lot of people. So thanks, Rick, for doing that. Jonathan, what could put John on the hot seat if not already? I mean, offensive line, it is it. It is it. If the offensive line again is one of the worst in the NFL, I think he's in trouble. I do. And so there's a lot of I think he feels that pressure. I think he knows that there is that pressure, you know, and that's what's got to change. Go Hawks says, who are your top two picks at 18? Whew. I mean, it's a really hard question to answer because it really depends on who realistically is available. There was a time where I told you Armand Membu was my guy, and that was back when he was in the 50s or 60s for a lot of people. I thought that guy was going to be an ideal guard prospect for you. He's now going to be gone, so he's not realistic. I think Will Campbell is the closest to a real stretch that he'll be available, but possible that he'd be available and would be a home run addition. I really love him at guard for the Seahawks. I love his mentality. The fact that he can play tackle if you need him to, but you know, I think he'd be a great guard for the Seahawks. So Will Campbell's probably number one that I don't know if it's realistic, but it's possible. Number two, it might be Donovan Jackson at this point. I'd say I really like Gray Zabel. Part of what Donovan Jackson brings is like the leadership, the personality that he has, I think is a great fit for that room. Plus the fact that he has played left tackle for a national championship team and done it pretty damn well to the point that now some teams are looking at him as a left tackle. Put that at guard, you're going to have an elite pass protector. He obviously can move in space, which is going to be great for the zone scheme. I just feel he is the highest floor option at guard for the Seahawks. So I feel really good about that. It's probably maybe my second at this point, but there's a lot I could probably get behind. All right. Another thing, if you didn't know, you can get this show now on all the audio versions of this podcast out there. Wherever you get your podcast, you can get this show now. If you used to get the Real Hawk Talk podcast on audio, it's the same place. So you don't have to change your subscription. If you have, if you want to add a subscription, just search for Hawk Blogger or search for Real Hawk Talk or search for HB Mornings. Any of those should get you this show showing up. Subscribe. Please give a 5-star rating on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, especially. We have a little bit of a lower rating. I think we're like 4.1 on Apple Podcasts. And I think that some of that's because that's been around for a really long time when we used to not do it very often and people got annoyed that we were inconsistent with how often we do the show. So I could really use your help. Give it a 5-star rating. It'll only take a second to do on Apple Podcasts, and really appreciate that. So a lot of good stuff coming, a lot more great content. And as I said, we are charging towards episode 365. Thanks to Jeff Simmons for another great Seahawks Saturday. Hope you guys all had a wonderful time with us, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Take care.